Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Tech Magic, the show where we journey to the heart of technology. I'm your host, Kathy Hackle. I am a tech and gaming executive and also a tech futurist, and I'm here to break down the latest innovations in tech, from everything from fashion to space to AI to everything in between. We are going to be talking about what is a fad and what is the future, and we're going to be having interviews with great folks, really interesting people. We're going to be talking a lot about what's happening in the tech space, which seems to be changing every single day at a really fast pace. This week, I am joined again by one of my bestest friends. I keep using that word. Lee Keebler, who has been my co-host for the first three episodes. This is episode four. Lee, how you doing?
I'm great. I'm back. I'm back in my studio, and I'm feeling like I've been looking through the notes today of like the stories and stuff, and this is by far the most interesting show.
I know. I'm super excited. But before we get into it, how was your weekend? What's up?
It's beautiful in Oregon right now. Like, it is storybook, like every Hallmark fall movie you've ever seen. That's what it looks like right now. Like, it's just gorgeous. And people have to understand, I grew up in Florida, so we don't have seasons. So I saw all of this stuff on TV of like, oh, this is like holiday specials would come on. I'm like, my front yard just has a palm tree and an alligator. Like, it just wasn't like, so for me to look outside and be like, oh my God, it's fall. It's actually happening. It's beautiful here.
I love that. Yeah. Well, it's great. Like, we had great weather this weekend in the DC area. And then today it just started getting kind of cold. The leaves are falling. It's like, we're getting a vibe. We're getting the Halloween vibe for Halloween.
I'm
recording this on
it
Monday.
Is. It's Monday. Yeah. It's October 30th, one day before Halloween. And, I still have to go get some candy for the front door. I haven't done that yet. I'm the guy they gouge. Like, I'm totally that dude that like shows up at the Walgreens on Halloween. No. And it's like, yeah, we have one bag of candy left. It's $55. Like, that's going to
be Ferrero Rocher. There you go. The Lindt chocolates. Now you got to pay for that, right? No sneakers. Yeah. So here you go. I had an amazing Halloween pre-weekend. Very focused on gaming. I'll give you kind of the rundown on what happened. So Thursday we did Trunk or Treat at our school, which Trunk or Treat, for folks outside the US that are listening to this, is pretty much trick or treating, but you line up, you park cars in a school parking lot, for example, and you decorate the trunk of the car, and then the kids go from each car to each car, you know, trick or treating from trunk to trunk.
All of our European listeners are like, wow, the car culture in America is deep. They're really obsessed.
Those Ford people. So we did Trunk or Treat. We had a blast. But get this. So I have two kids that are in middle school, right? So they're, you know, they're tweens. One is a teen, one's a tween. And then I have a younger one. And I wanted to kind of be a cool parent. So of course, like, I go buy, you know, I'm buying candy for this. And I come across the Mr. Beast chocolate bars, the Feastable bars. And okay, I want to buy a whole bunch of these. So turns out we were the hottest, most popular car in all Trunk or Treat. And I sent you a video.
I know, I saw it in my, so Mike, okay, here, I want to back all of this up. For those who don't know, because I was not in the know, because I'm not of this generation of kids who are watching YouTube more than anything, I didn't know who Mr. Beast was like 2 years ago. Now I realize like how far and how old I evidently am and didn't know it. All of that aside, was the chocolate good?
Yeah, I mean, it's good. I had one of the ones that looks like a Crunch Bar and it tastes the same as a Crunch Bar. So like, I don't think it's the chocolate that is making the kids go crazy. It was Mr. Beast, because these are like expensive chocolate bars.
So wild to
me. I mean,
that a YouTube.
When I showed you the video,
no, I know,
right?
No.
Like the kids are literally like, I'm literally telling the kids like, back up. And we were down to two chocolate bars. And I had to like just throw them out because these kids were like, it was crazy how much they love Mr. Beast.
It's wild that the YouTube, TikTok, social media culture has been able to cultivate personality types that are arguably as big, if not bigger, than what used to be controlled by major RAN studios. And like, you can take a moment and take a step back and look at, okay, that's a hilarious story. And that's like really kind of silly in its own right, but the impact that that has is wild, really. Like, that's just shocking that's where we are today. I actually think it's a positive. I think that I think it's great, as long as it's like being you. Like, obviously we can go down a couple rabbit holes where there are alternate personalities on YouTube that are damaging. And this gets to a question of parenting, really, and content monitoring, which is a whole other topic that I'm not personally able to talk to. But it's just crazy that there's influencers that have that much personality out there, and they're
he's
independent.
He's a multimillionaire.
Yeah.
And I had like moms coming up to me and like, what are you giving these kids? Like, they're rushing. They're all like talking about going to your car for trunk or treat. It was crazy. Crazy. Even my parents, my dad was like, I don't even know who this Mr. Beast is, but I want one of those chocolate bars. he's 80, almost 80. And he's like, I need to try this chocolate bar. What's up? So it was really fun. Then I took my son to see the Five Nights at Freddy's. We survived Five Nights. The movie was fantastic. The jump scares were fine.
Wild thing about this movie, Metacritic hated it. Like, the Metacritic score for this film was like basically Super Mario Bros. The 1993 movie bad, right? Like, they didn't like it. But then, like, everyone who went and saw it, the actual like viewer score was like through the roof.
Mm-hmm. All the kids, I mean, all the young people that were there, all the kids that we went with, they were like super happy. And then they had Matt Pat and like a whole bunch of YouTubers. They did cameos, and like they were just like, I don't know, like, it was a great experience. All the kids, I mean, because we took a bunch of kids, they had a blast. They loved it. They were like, when does number two come out?
So what do you think the appropriate age group is for? Because, I mean, it's hard to find an age group for, like, horror films. Like, last time when I was a kid, I think the scary movie that kids went to go see was, like, Ernest Scared Stupid. That's really dating me. But, like, there wasn't just, like, a ton. there wasn't a ton of, like, age-appropriate horror films, right?
This is PG-13. Okay, this is PG-13 by Blumhouse, which I was like, okay, what's up? They did have some kill scenes, but the kill scenes, that the way they got around it, not to make it so graphic or anything, is they would do like shadow work, so things like that, or they would imply something. So it was interesting. I mean, I think my son was fine. Like, I was more concerned, like, there's ghost children in the movie. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I hate ghosts. Like, that's just scary to me. So that part was more concerning to me than, you know, the animatronic stuff. But it was great. And then I chaperoned a middle school dance.
Oh, this is where you were a zombie cheerleader, right?
I was a zombie cheerleader because it was for the cheer team. It was a fundraiser for the cheer squad. So all the moms dressed up as, you know, all the chaperone moms were zombie cheerleaders. And the dads were like zombie referees. It was great. These kids danced the night away.
Together. Did they do like the middle school dances we had where it's like guys on one side, girls on the other, and they didn't ever.
It was groups. It was all groups of kids.
That's cool.
Like, the boys were dancing like a group, and the girls and the boys and the girls. Like, it wasn't like a like couples dance or anything. There was no slow dancing. It was more like all the groups were dancing, going crazy. So once again, I was like, okay, this Mr. Beast thing really worked at Trunk or Treat. I'm going to get a whole bag of Mr. Beast bars. and bring them to the dance in case the kids decide not to dance. No problem there. Literally, they were dancing their heads off.
They were hopped up on sugar. Of course they were. That's your fault.
It was crazy. They all the songs, of course, all the Taylor Swift songs. They had tons of songs they were making requests. They started to dance to some old school stuff, like Soulja Boy, Superman.
I hate that you just called that old school. No, I'm done. I'm done with this
podcast. I was wait, what? Because Doja Cat, of course, I'm not going to know Doja Cat, right? But Soulja Boy, I'm wait, what? And but they knew all these songs. It was amazing. They did Cotton Eye Joe, the Macarena.
Oh, that is old school. If they're dancing to Cotton Eye Joe. The Macarena. Did they know the Macarena? How did they? What?
They knew the Macarena. They knew Cotton Eye Joe, Gangnam Style. I was just oh my gosh, these kids they're learning to dance on TikTok. That's
is
my impression.
Macarena on TikTok? That just seems like a dance that wouldn't be on TikTok.
I have no idea, but they were all doing the Macarena. And I was just I'm having a blast, right? I'm on the sideline because I'm chaperoning. So I'm not supposed to be in their dance, but I'm grooving on the corner and chaperoning. I also hired this group to bring two virtual reality stations. So the kids were doing Beat Saber and Fruit Ninja.
Oh, that'd be blessed. Yeah.
It was so good. It was so good. But it was getting down into the trenches with Generation Alpha. This was somewhere Gen Z because they were 13, but most of them were Gen Alpha, and just looking at them in the wild was really interesting to me.
Jane Goodall over
observing
here.
Observing them in the wild. So yeah, I would say my Halloween pre-weekend was very full of gaming lore, from Mr. Beast to my son's costume, which was Bendy and the Ink Machine, which is another indie game, to FNAF movie, and just experiencing being with the kids in the dance. I don't know. It was really interesting to kind of experience this in the wild. So yeah.
I sat at a bonfire and sipped cider and watched the leaves fall. That was my entire weekend. And I wouldn't trade it.
There you go. Come on, the Macarena. Come on, Lee. Soulja Boy, you could have done Superman. It was great. All right. So now that we talked about our weekends, our fun weekends, before we get into the show, I do want to tell folks a little bit about something that's going on with Adweek. Adweek is hosting Adweek's Next Tech event in November in New York. I will be speaking on spatial computing, AI, gaming. Who knows? I'm going to bring it. But they do have a discount for folks that might want to attend. It is, if you use the code TECHMAGIC30, you will get 30% off Adweek Next Tech's event. And there will be a link in the show notes. So I hope to meet some of y'all in person there. I will be there and I'll bring it. So I'm very excited to talk about the future of tech while I'm there. So anyway, let's get into it. So much happening. I feel like we're recording this on Monday. I feel like we need to start. I want to start with President Biden's executive order.
This could take the entire podcast.
I know, right?
I read through it and it just keeps going.
It's huge. It's more than 100 pages, I think. But anyway, President Biden, Biden-Harris administration signed into executive order today, an executive order for AI that is very, very interesting. There's some really interesting points in there. It's been many, many months in the making. I live in DC. This has been something that has been worked on from, back a couple months ago when they released the AI blueprint Bill of Rights. But they've been working on this for a long time. They called a whole bunch of people into DC to be present for this executive order signing. It was a very exciting day here in DC. And here's my first impression on some of the things that I saw in the executive order. It is about, in several things, it is about keeping the United States as one of the top leaders in AI, keeping the country very competitive when it comes to that. It is about creating standards in some way and adding some guardrails. It is about hopefully protecting consumers' privacy. That's a hope. It is also about creating, and this is where the Department of Commerce is going to come in, creating watermarks and creating protections for content so that people know when they're looking at something that might have been altered. That, I think, is incredibly important. There's also a whole component of the executive order that deals with remaining competitive and hiring people for the AI advancements and innovations that the country wants to pursue. So, for example, there's a website called AI.gov, G-O-V, that's already up and running where people can apply to jobs in the administration related to AI. So very, very broad. I haven't finished reading it. I just read like the cliff notes that I shared. And what I'm hearing from folks is I'm personally happy that something like this has been brought forth because, you know, if we wait for Congress to act, it's going to take a while. So I'm glad that the administration, just a little while. I think they've got other stuff right now to deal with. So I feel like this is a good way to start. I am hearing pushback from certain people in the industry saying that it might be too far reaching, that, you know, it might be actually constraining innovation. I don't see it that way, but I feel like because it's so early on, like I want to sit with the whole thing, read it and digest it. But thoughts, Lee?
I read through it and I don't think it's overreaching because it doesn't really establish anything, right? Like it doesn't establish a protocol or anything like that. So I would immediately have the question of like, if you think this is too far overreaching, what are you doing and why do you need to be stopped? Because there was nothing in it.
Well, there's the part where it says that, you know, before you release these products, you have to share certain things with the federal government,
which makes sense
as it pertains to like third party certifications, more information on if this can be used, for example, to build nuclear weapons or biological weapons. There's also some information there potentially on like having to release what are you trained it on. I'm not too clear on that part yet. But I feel like
the training is
from industry.
The training part's a requirement because that's really where the crux of a lot of these arguments are happening. As we're looking at how these AIs are coming about, like they are being trained off of other people's real intellectual property. And what does that actually mean as a right to do so? And it's an open debate. I'm not claiming to have an answer there. There's some really interesting points in all of this. I do think that one of the things that I liked when I read through it was it took a strong stance of making sure that it stayed a competitive landscape. There was even a statement of there is too much growing concern that it's going to basically leave Google, Amazon, Microsoft as being the only ones able to compete. And I fully think on the face of it, that's false because none of those companies are currently competing with even the smaller startups that have learned how to harness this. And a lot of it is kind of a Pandora's box situation, similar to the internet in general, of where it's already out there. It's already in the open. There's already a lot of these things set up on open source tools where it's kind of fair game. If you look at the individual areas that are really pioneering AI, if it's voice, you're looking at 11 Labs. Mm-hmm. If it's text or voice now, you're looking at ChatGPT. If it's images, you're looking at Midjourney or DALL-E. Google, Amazon, and Microsoft never popped up in that conversation, right? There's not a recognizable major.
Well, but they are investing billions.
They are starting to, of course, and that's where it happens.
I mean, there's all the partnerships. So
right, and that's the opportunity, right? Like that's the opportunity, but their growth set is going to be based on the continual process of like acquisition. You know, if you go back to 2016, 2017, everyone was talking about Oculus, the startup that happened with this kid who was living in an RV in his parents' driveway. And yes, now it's Meta, now it's owned by Facebook and blah, 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 blah. But arguably it wouldn't have been as big or as powerful or as popular if it hadn't been, right? So there's still a lot of room for that growth. And once upon a time, Facebook was a startup, right? You just kind of have to take it as
Amazon,
it comes.
They were all a startup. Apple.
Right. And this is it's a bigger question of like making sure that whatever happens here, I think this is a good opportunity for them to start slipping in some like net neutrality conversations and explaining why this approach to the internet is necessary to make sure all of these things are good. What I would like to see is a stronger approach, and I think we could see it through this, a stronger approach to what we've seen in the EU where it comes to like COPPA compliance. Yeah. That we have to get under control, and we seem to be like the last horse to cross that finish line.
He did mention, you know, advertising to kids or certain things. I took some notes. One part of where President Biden said, tech with global impact requires global action and cooperation. He talked about more tech change in the next 5 years than we've seen in 50 years. AI being the most consequential tech of our age. It said, you know, something like this must be governed. You know, he talked about a lot of different things.
If you believe that, though, this is where I got a little hung up. And I believe he's right in all of that. I think this is one of the more important pieces of technology. I think we've kind of overblown where it currently is today, but I can see where it's going. And if you truly believe that, then so this order, as I read in the articles, were it called for the Department of Health and Human Services to create a task force for it and create a strategic plan and all of that stuff. I'm looking at it going, if you really believe that, shouldn't this call for a new department? There needs to be a Department of Artificial Intelligence. Like, there needs to be something. Because can the Department of Health and Human Services really fully grasp what we're talking about here?
No. No, there's been a lot of discussion here in DC circles about creating a new department, like a new office to regulate this.
I mean, Donald Trump created Space Force, like, out of thin air. And that's a thing now. Like, can we not get something useful out of this? I feel like this is right where it should happen.
Well, maybe not out of thin air, but yeah, he definitely talked about Department of Commerce working on, you know, watermarks. And he definitely made a point. Congress needs to act.
Yeah.
When they do that, I don't know. But yeah, it was definitely big day in DC. Big day in DC. But I am of your school of thought too, that there should be an organization, right, that oversees this, that is kind of the one that people know they need to go to, instead of like, now I need to go to the Department of Commerce, now I need to go to the Department of this. Not like, no, there should be a central organization, right? And, you know, there's the Office of Science and Technology, but that's a really broad set of terms. So anyway, exciting day in DC. That definitely leads us into more conversations around AI. Let's talk about hardware first, right? So as this, you know, executive order is signed, there's lots of news about several companies, right? There was the noise about OpenAI, Sam Altman's OpenAI, talking to Johnny Ive about creating some type of hardware for ChatGPT. And when I was at WSJ Tech Live, he talked about it briefly. But Altman's also one of the main investors in Humane. Humane is a startup out of Silicon Valley, founded by two former Apple professionals, that is focused on creating something other than the mobile phone. And they actually say the future is not in our faces, it's somewhere else. And they're releasing something that called the Humane AI Pin on November 9th. I believe the cost is going to be around $1,000. It's a pin that you put on your lapel or wherever.
There's an asterisk on that $1,000 though, because I also read with a subscription.
With a
subscription. So you buy it and you aren't even done.
Yes, subscription. You got to keep paying. Well, that makes sense. You know, they got to make some money beyond just the hardware. But yeah, it'll be interesting. That's November 9th. You know, we'll see. We'll see. Are you like, I'm signed up to get the email. Like, I will buy this thing when it drops. Are you into it?
I'm hesitant. I'm getting real, like, I'm getting real vaporware vibes off of this one. I'm being honest.
Really?
Yeah, because there's things about it that, like, okay, is it a real thing? Yes. But you and I had the exact same conversation when it came to Magic Leap a couple of years ago. They raised a crap ton of money.
I went out to work for them, but yeah.
And they have a good product now. But really, there was a period of time where I'm like, I'm not sure that whale's going to fly. Like, that's just where I was. You know, and thankfully proven wrong. And now they've got a location. They're doing a lot in, like, architectural and BIM. I just saw them at AES, AWE. They're on their second headset.
They just have a new CEO.
Yeah. Like, all of this stuff happening. So, like, don't take it for just, like, speculative me being kind of pessimistic, which is where I live. I look at it and I'm like, okay, this will be a real thing. It's going to come out. But there are real questions about this hardware that I don't get. And I know enough about the technology to go, it's a pen. It connects and does all of these things. You can talk to it, which means it has a built-in microphone. It can, like, relay at some point. I'm guessing it's going to have to leverage the phone to, like, get to ChatGPT. But there were some whispers about, like, an app store or something. I don't know. All of this stuff is all speculative.
It does projection as well.
It does projection.
Right? Into the hand, I think.
What powers it? Because if you're doing that much stuff, it's going to have, like, a 2-hour battery life. Like, that's where I start getting, I start really, like, reading between the lines. And I'm just like, rechargeable battery is going to have to be in this thing. And if it's as small as they say it is, it's not going to be that big of a battery. How, like, is it running on quantum physics? Fairy dust? That doesn't make any sense. And then the projection, I don't get that. As a product, I don't get it, because that means it's useless when you can see. Like, if there's a light, you can't use it.
There's light.
So
I guess we'll have to, I mean, I haven't demoed it. Like, that's one piece of technology I've never been invited to demo. And like, Humane is one of those companies that at one point in my life I was dying to work for. You know, never did. But I'm curious.
I'm curious.
I want to see it out in the wild.
I want to see it.
I want to see how it works.
I want to see it in daytime.
I'm going to buy it. Yeah. I want to see, you know.
Can you imagine really, a movie theater full of people with this stupid thing on? It's the only time they can use the projector.
That's a good point. Yeah, I don't know. You know, it made its debut during Paris Fashion Week on Coperni's runway. And like, Naomi Campbell wore it, like I've mentioned it. So they've been kind of working in the fashion space, which I find that pretty interesting. And like, one of the CEO's first talks was at the business of fashion. So there's a fashion element here.
And I think that's a good spot for it. Like, that, it does make sense. I want to see what it is. Yeah. I'm just pessimistic.
Maybe we'll do an unboxing on the podcast when I get mine. So there seems to be this moment of, is this the next phone? Is this the next Google Glass? Like, is this a real thing? So, like, for you, I guess, fad or future?
I mean, we'll have to see when it comes out, but it just feels very faddy. Like, just saturated fad.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I really think the founders of Humane, like, they're onto something. Like, they've designed great stuff. I want to kind of get my hands on it. I feel like I can't tell you a fad or future yet. I do know there's a future post-smartphone. Is it this device? That I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. That I have no idea.
Oh, totally. I'm with you on that. And again, if they've got a way that does all of these things that's on the spec list and they can power it and it lasts more than 5 hours, that in and of itself is a technological revolution. Someone's figured something out that I'm unaware of.
Yeah. So we'll have to see. We'll have to see what other hardware comes out. Like, to me, and I always go back to this Apple Vision Pro, spatial computing, that's where you actually change human-to-human interaction and human-computer interaction. I've been working on something really interesting that's going to be going live in a couple of weeks. I'll share it here. I can't share much right now, but I think something that the business world needs to better understand what's going to happen, because it really is being able to use AI in that way, you know, that next step where people are talking about AR hardware. This is, there's this other step that they're not connecting. It's the AI plus the compute that I think people are missing. So anyway, that leads us.
So I'm just in the dark. I'm as in the dark as the listeners. So you've piqued my interest.
Well, our producer knows, but she can't say. Wink, wink. So that leads us into our next story, which is that people are spending, now that you can talk to ChatGPT, people seem to be spending a lot of time talking to ChatGPT, a la, you know, the movie Her.
Yeah.
They're talking to it through their earbuds and kind of like having long conversations, long hours chatting with it. I mean, I don't know. I haven't really been talking to ChatGPT that much. I don't know why. I just have been like more using it for, you know, other stuff. Like, you know, I've got a brief, help me here. But I feel like a lot of people are starting to talk to it a lot more. I'm more interested in seeing, going to fully multimodal and being able to see and be like, hey, what is this? Or should I buy this? Or I'm more interested in that, the vision part of it, than the vocal, like the voice part, even though voice is incredibly important. How do you feel about that? Are you chatting? Like, are you chatting?
I am. I read that article and I was like, instead of being creeped, I expected to be creeped out by it. Maybe this is just the Halloween season on me. I was reading this and I'm like, oh, this is going to be creepy. But as I read through it, I was like, you know what? I kind of want to try that. So I did, and I played with it for a little while. I actually wired it up to the system here in the studio.
You want to try it?
I will. But I want to tell you the story first, because I hadn't told you this yet. This is funny. Before this episode started, I signed on and I looked at my clock and I had 3 minutes before we went to record. And so since I had it hooked up to the studio, I asked ChatGPT, I said, what is something that I can do in the next 3 minutes to get myself into a positive headspace? Not that I was having a bad day or anything. I just was like trying to think of something to ask it. And then it just naturally walked me through a 3-minute mental preparation exercise, reflection, meditation moment. I was just like, oh,
wow.
That's...
Did you feel better?
I didn't feel bad when I started it. So I can't really like necessarily say, but the fact that it had a very real answer of something that was like, yeah, close your eyes, take a deep breath, picture this, da 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 da. Like it just went through the process and I was just kind of shocked. And then it asked us like, and I didn't, because the 3 minutes were up, but it did ask, it said, did that help? Is there something like, did that help? Or was that good advice or something? Like it asked for positive affirmation feedback on it of like, hey, did this get you in the right direction? So I was surprised by that, that interaction in such a short period of time.
I might do that. I love that use for it. I'm more used to like just asking it to do work for me, or like, you know, I've got a brief or I'm writing something, or yeah, it's like a workhorse for me. So,
so the basic premise of that article was a question of like, what would be the negative impacts on a person's ability to communicate with real people? If they were spending too much time talking to basically a robot, right? Like an artificial intelligence. So experiment, let's ask that question to ChatGPT.
Drum roll.
What are the negative impacts that can occur to a person talking to ChatGPT that may restrict them from talking to people in their real lives?
Engaging with ChatGPT extensively can potentially lead to some negative impacts on a person's real-life social interactions. 1. Reduced social interaction. Spending too much time chatting with AI can lead to a decrease in face-to-face or meaningful conversations with real people. 2. Impersonal communication. Conversations with AI lack emotional depth and empathy, which can lead to emotionally distant interactions with others. 3. Erosion of social skills. Relying heavily on AI may erode important social skills, such as active listening, empathy, and understanding nonverbal cues. 4. Limited emotional expression. AI struggles to understand and respond to complex emotions, potentially affecting one's ability to express feelings effectively in real-life interactions. 5. Miscommunication. Exclusively relying on AI may lead to misunderstandings when communicating with people who have different communication styles or expectations. 6. Reduced confidence. Constantly seeking answers or social interaction from AI might reduce a person's confidence in their real-life communication skills. It's essential to use ChatGPT as a helpful tool, but not as a substitute for genuine human interaction. Balancing your interactions with AI and engaging with real people is crucial for maintaining strong social skills and meaningful relationships.
I mean, that's pretty in depth and I think legit, right?
Yeah. I was like, how many more? She kept going. 7. I was like, okay, how many more are we going? I hope she doesn't have 13. But you know what? I think most of those are right.
But one of the things, so as I was playing with this and I asked that question, I was like, wow, these are really in-depth and thoughtful answers. And then it kind of correlated it into a list. And so now it's going to stay in my context. I can always go back. And I started thinking about how often I go on like walks and am trying to work through things in my head for work and stuff. And I can easily see myself utilizing this with a pair of headphones, just talking through ideas, whether it's for this podcast or for my own work or for a client. I get where people are coming from as I was reading through it, because it was like, people are going to talk to this thing for hours. Yeah, actually, I think they will. If this is a future or fad, I think this is future.
This is future in some way. I'm with you. I just think we have to limit it in some ways. Like, I don't want my kids talking to, you know, NPCs all day, if they're in the game. I don't know. It's interesting. I feel like I'm going to start using it more.
Oh, totally.
Right? I haven't really used it. I've been typing. I guess I'm used to typing when I'm communicating with a computer more so than talking.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's going to change a paradigm for me personally on how I use technology. And I'm going to be talking to it a lot more. I'm used to talking to my VR headset or whatever. But But yeah, that's going to be interesting. I mean, good answers. Good answers, ChatGPT.
Yeah, at least it doesn't say, hey, everything's perfect. Just talk to me. Tell me all of your problems. And what's your passcode for your bank account? Like, it's...
And I'm the CEO of your bank. And don't regulate me with executive orders. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm with you. I think this is definitely part of the future. You know, I think they'll probably sound better as we move forward.
Well, and that's one of the things that actually impressed me is it does sound really good. Bluetooth sounds awful, and it's connected via Bluetooth. So that phony sound, I realized like as I went and connected it to the board via Bluetooth, I was like, oh, like the quality went way down. Mm-hmm. But prior to it, the conversational side of it actually felt pretty good. So
with that, yeah,
we'll see. They've got like 5 voices you can choose from, and I'm sure more are coming. And eventually, it'll.
Well, maybe we should have a segment. Ask ChatGPT.
Yeah.
Like our listeners ask us, you know, ask ChatGPT stuff on the air.
I was talking to a friend of mine.
That was a great start.
I was going through some of these voices with a friend of mine, and their question was, well, how long until it's Snoop Dogg? Because, like, evidently, Snoop Dogg is the go-to for everything AI. If there's a voice to be used.
It used to be, like, what, James Earl Jones? Now it's like, no, it's got to be Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, go get Snoop Dogg. Like, yeah, he'll do it.
Well, all the kids at the dance would know who Snoop Dogg is.
But yeah, could they name a single Snoop Dogg song?
I don't know.
Think
that's a good
think
question.
About it.
Some of them are not very like PG, so I don't know.
I mean, he has. I don't know if he's had a song in the last 15 years.
He's done a lot of collaborations.
A lot of collaborations.
Anyway, we're gonna have to dig into the Snoop.
Sorry, I'm going on. I'm going on a tangent.
But anyway, so let's go to our next story to talk about fatter future. So now we're gonna go into gaming, which we love. We love, 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 love. And our producer actually wrote the cutest post on LinkedIn, not little, but the cutest post on LinkedIn saying that she could listen to you speak about gaming all day, Lee. So there you go.
What did I say? I'll say it again.
I don't know what you were talking about, but she loved it. She'll join us for a dispatch from the future. She can weigh in. But a few things on the gaming front. Call of Duty just turned 20.
Nope. No, it didn't. I refuse to accept that.
No. Yeah.
I refuse to accept that. I am not that old. Nope. Call of Duty came out 3 years ago. Nope.
Yeah, you refuse to accept that, but it's the truth.
That's crazy.
It's the truth. 20 years ago, huge franchise, of course. Our producer and myself actually know Chance Glasgow, who's one of the founding members of the franchise. He's gone on to do some great VR stuff. He's doing, you know, more gaming stuff still. Fantastic, fantastic guy in the gaming space. But yeah, Call of Duty, happy birthday.
I mean, happy crazy. Birthday. I can't believe I was 10 when that game came out, right? Yeah, I was 10, right? Yeah, yeah, that sounds right.
There you go, there you go. I was 3. So yeah, there you go. So I didn't play that much Call of Duty. That was more like my brother's kind of game, to be honest. Like, I'm not a big first-person shooter kind of gal. But yeah.
I was a Halo guy. I played a lot of Halo.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. But yeah, I mean, congratulations. Happy birthday, Call of Duty. And I'm sure a lot of people listening to this have played it or still play it. So it's been a very successful franchise.
It's one of the wildest long-running franchises. It'll never catch up to Mario, but it's pretty impressive.
Yeah. But maybe we should have Chance come, because I wonder if when he was working on it, did they really think it was going to be like what it's become? Like this amazing huge franchise that's been around for 20 years.
Yeah.
I wonder if like they it ever crossed their mind that they would be like that. So yeah, happy birthday, Call of Duty. And let's talk a little bit about brands are still entering the gaming space.
And they will never stop.
They'll never stop. I'm with you. I feel like it's going to keep going. But the latest news that we shared and we were talking about is Marriott Bonvoy, which is the Marriott brand, owns a whole bunch of different brands, has launched a virtual city, really a virtual map inside Fortnite Creative. And they launched it last week. A lot of their brands have different experiences, different games. So Moxie has one, the Westin, the W Hotels, the Autograph Collection. So there's different games that you can play within the map. I believe on November 2nd, so sometime right after this podcast drops, they're going to have some like celebrity secret guests show up on the map. And yeah, I mean, I haven't played it. I'm going to be honest. I haven't had a chance to go to the map and play it. I've seen some videos of folks posting on LinkedIn. What do you think? I mean, there seem to be the first large hospitality brand to enter Fortnite Creative with this kind of large scale, larger scale type of map.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's going to come down to content, and really what it'll come down to is longevity and updated content, right? And that's where all of this comes to head, is like as soon as a brand breaks into, whether it's a Fortnite or it's a Roblox or anything in between, okay, cool, you do your launch and you might have some like entertaining things to do in it, but is there a campaign behind the campaign, right? Is there a continuance to whatever you're building? And we'll see. A lot of brands get in, they get their press release and they get out. Very rarely, but when they do stick around, like what we saw with Vans and Roblox, like they've got one of the best games in Roblox and they continue to update it. That's become a thing for them. It's definitely a resource on their behalf. So that's the part that... It's not a fad that brands are going to keep doing this, but if the brand's world is a fad or the future is dependent on whatever they decide to do with it afterwards. So I looked into it. Cool world. We'll see how far they can push it. It seems to make sense. I like Marriott as a company. Like they're mm-hmm. one of my preferred, I don't get paid to say that or anything. They're just one of my preferred hotels. Like I kind of default to them quite often. So we'll see.
Like, I wish that they had a way to, like, if you play a certain amount of hours, they recognize and give you points, your Vonda.
I think
points.
Everyone wants that. And I'm sure they even asked Epic, hey, can we do this? And Epic probably just was like, no, we don't want to deal with that. There are those things that I would like to see these type of experiences be able to harness the popularity mm-hmm. of the brand that's in there as well. I think that's a missing gap on all the platforms. This is a problem with Roblox. This is a problem with Fortnite. It's a problem with all of them. So the first ones that actually start allowing for some of that interaction, I think are going to be the ones that win big time.
Yeah. And I want to know, like, I don't think it's said in the press release or the information that we got. I don't know if it's a permanent build or if it's just the pop-up. Temporary.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see who these surprise celebrity stars are going to be on November, you know, later in November.
And that's always the big tell is, well, if I'm them, and I am not, mm-hmm. they were not my client. I had nothing to do with this build, but this would be the advice that I would give. You want to schedule these type of things to at least have the longevity to the nearest time mm-hmm. off for school, right? So I'm thinking at least in the US, Christmas. Well, you've got Thanksgiving break. You have your Thanksgiving break and you can go and you can run it through Christmas and you've got all of these like little holidays through the winter. So I would at least push it to like January 5th, right? If it were a pop-up style, because that does give your core gaming playing demographic plenty of time and a lot of downtime to explore whatever it is that you've built. And that is your free tip of the day. if you want more information, I charge you.
There you go. So I definitely think future, I think we're going to continue to see activations from brands going into these spaces, whether it's, you know, Fortnite, Creative, whether it's Roblox, whether it's Rec Room or whatever, Horizon. I mean, we'll see.
Yeah.
We're going to continue seeing this. It's just part of the future, part of where engagement's going and where people are spending their time. Yeah. So fad or future?
Oh, it's the future. It's the future. It's the now. It's
the now.
It's the yesterday.
I'm with you. It's the now.
You know, this is the next medium of advertisement, mm-hmm. but I hope that it's more product placement than advertisement. That is the part that needs to be honed in, I think, quite a bit. And this goes back to earlier in our conversation. This is why at least the U.S. government needs mm-hmm. to get in front of things like COPPA compliance and like start mm-hmm. instituting our own, you know, systems and checks for these type of things, because it can go wildly out of control and we need mm-hmm. to be ready for it, because we weren't ready for it when it came to social media and that didn't pan out well. So that was our warning shot. Let's not screw this up an millionth time and get it right for once.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. So we are going to go on break pretty soon. And I kind of want to lead to the interview that I'm going to be kind of doing it after the break. But I want to talk a little bit about MasterCard at Money 2020. The CMO of MasterCard announced that they are going to be elevating the priceless experiences at what's called the MasterCard Midnight Theater, which is a multi-sensory performance venue in New York City. They had a soft launch. Now they're ready to go full in. As many people might know, some people might not know, through MasterCard through priceless.com has been doing a lot of things beyond what people would expect. So like restaurants, they've got restaurants in Estoril. They have one in, I think, somewhere in Asia. They have one in Brazil. They did a fragrance last year. They're doing a lot of different things, expanding beyond what people would imagine. And there's a multi-sensory performance venue in New York City that is going to have amazing, really interesting performances and artists and acts scheduled there. And I love the term multi-sensory because it is going to be expanding beyond just, you know, traditional types of activations. And that's going to lead really, that leads us really well into the interview. So for the interview that we're having after the break, it's going to be my dear, dear friend, Ari Peralta from Arigami. He is a sensory designer, one of the world's leading sensory designers. He works with all the top brands, all the top cities. I mean, he even right now has he's working on unveiling a course that he just announced it on sensory design for space. Yeah, I mean, he is the master. He's just an amazing person that I feel very connected to. I love his vision for sensory design. So that will be after the break. So we're going to go on break, and then we'll have the interview with Ari Peralta, and then we'll come back for Dispatch from the Fringe with our producer, and we'll wrap it up.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com.
So Ari Peralta, welcome to Tech Magic.
Hi, Kathy. Thank you for having me.
Well, I am thrilled to have you here. You're one of my favorite people in the universe. Just for background, for people to kind of know, like, Ari and I keep missing each other. Like, we're always like, I'm heading to California and I'm leaving and he's subtly coming in. So it's really interesting because we've kind of built up this really like this friendship through distance, right? And through shared interest. And we even got to be the co-chairs at this year's Retail Innovation Conference. So that was really exciting that we got to share that.
I think we can call ourselves pen pals, for lack of a better term, maybe on the international level, but it was such a great honor to co-host. Mm-hmm. We were the first co-hosts, right, of the Retail Innovation Expo, first non-executives within their organization to be invited. And I think our synergy and love, passion for empowering human beings and doing it from each one of our angles is just quite a great experience that I'm grateful for.
Yeah. And we're both Latinos, which is also like another level of like, oh my gosh, we totally get along. So this is really cool. So I want people that don't know you, and you're very well known in the sensory design industry and the architecture and design industry. But for anyone that's listening to this, to Tech Magic, and this is the first time they come across you, can you introduce, you know, who is Ari Peralta? What do you do? What is your purpose?
Well, I'm a Harvard trained neuroscientist. I'm also an MBA and a sensory designer. So sensory design is basically an emerging market of today's retail experience. And we use this theory based on neuroscience saying that, you know, we are multisensory beings. We perceive the world in recipes and symphonies of sensory signals. And my specific interest is how can we use these signals to empower people, forget customers, but human beings in these physical spaces that we're creating. up to 94% of our time, according to the latest research, is being spent indoors, whether it's inside a car, whether it's in our desk at our office or at our home, on an airplane, name it. We are really disconnected with what's best for us. And my job, my work, my passion, as is yours, is really to empower people. And, you know, we have seen retail interfaces and systems continue to evolve. So basically, I help retailers, I help brands, I help organizations elevate and optimize experience design by better understanding user needs and really focusing on the outcome as a behavioral outcome versus just an experience for time spending's sake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's really interesting. I think can you walk our listeners to maybe an example of what you do in sensory design, right? Because some people are listening to this and like, oh, this sounds really interesting. But give us an example. Walk someone through maybe one of your projects that you can talk about publicly on what you mean by sensory design.
So one of our most recent research projects was conducted for and by Kimball International, one of the top furniture manufacturers in the U.S. and North America. And just to give everybody an idea in context, they outfit furniture for healthcare sector, for education, higher education, and also for workplace. And, you know, similar to many giants in that space, they're trying to help their clients find a way to lure back employees back into the office, which is a huge concern across industries. We were able to apply our sensory profiling framework to better understand what are people doing at work, what's the furniture that facilitates them to be the most productive. Most people, they might not call it productivity, but they want to get their job done. And we linked that if we provide them the right furniture with the right layout and personalized sensory settings, in other words, adjustable lighting, adjustable ergonomics, adjustable noise control and privacy. These are the elements that we found you can actually tweak and personalize and really achieve that level of belonging that most of us are lacking in spaces that are created, as you know, as a one size fits all.
That's fantastic. And when you're talking about sensory design, right, you've mentioned sensory enabling technologies. Like, what are some examples of that? Like, how do we start to wrap our heads around that, right? Because I think the example you just gave, a lot of people can wrap their heads around because a lot of people are like, you know, whether they might be returning to office or they might be thinking about, you know, even their home office, like all these sorts of things. But what are these sensory enabling technologies?
Well, besides being what brought us together, you and I, you obviously being this powerhouse innovator and generator of new ideas, not just around tech, but around what do we use tech for? And on my part, it's how do we make these experiences healthy for the human brain, but also in a comprehensive way, in a multisensory way, because that's the way we perceive things. So what we're talking about here are technologies that you love, like Apple's new Vision Pro, but some new technologies that aren't visual based. I want to share one that really has my attention currently. It's a company called Emerge. They've developed air-based haptics. So this is basically like a flat piece of technology that suddenly allows customers of theirs like Disney and Sony to create this new augmented space led by haptics where, at least for Disney, you know, our children and even ourselves who are fans will be able to high-five our favorite characters through this kind of technology. Now, that said, we are now entering a whole new era of sensory amplification, which includes amplified or augmented earpieces, like the ones that are going to be used in future UN conferences that translate in the moment. So these are functional technologies that act as a bridge between the way we perceive reality and translating the way we do that in virtual or hybrid environments.
I love that. I'm a big fan of Emerge as well. I know Sly and Isaac over there, and I've got a unit over here myself. So big fan of what they're doing with, you know, Disney and Sony and fantastic technology. So yeah, I align with you on that one too. So you talked a little about sensory profiling, right? Being the key to delivering those personalized experiences. Walk us through that. Like, explain to me, tell me more about what that means and why it is the key to unlocking that.
Well, I think if we go back to what we've learned in the realm of marketing for the last, 50 years, it's that, you know, designers, agencies, creatives, we've done a wonderful job using our intuitive sense, if you will, to develop these campaigns. But unfortunately, we have a super hyper fragmented audience, right? It's not as easy to get our messages to those audiences. We've learned that the more we can tailor those messages, the better they can be received and obviously lead to purchase behavior. Now, what I've been focusing on through our team and through our partnerships, including with you and Journey, it's how can we better understand customers' sensory preferences so that we can ensure there's a personal connection between the sensory design we think we're creating, but actually meeting customers where they are in terms of how they process information and how they regulate that information. In other words, there's four different main types. There are people who seek multisensory stimulation. There's people who avoid it. There's also people who we know, in particular on the spectrum, who, you know, certain sensory stimuli, it hurts. It's painful. So the idea of sensory profiling people, it's the evolution from where we started, from simple demographics to psychographics to what I like to call sensographics, going deeper into how do we actually create meaningful experiences that don't overwhelm you with unnecessary signals.
That's really interesting around how do you kind of cater. Like, there's so many things that, you know, some of us that love, you know, just bombarded by all these experiences, like, I'm fine. But I know for some people, it can be overwhelming, like you mentioned. So it's keeping in mind that your audiences have multiple sensory preferences. I think that's important. I want to talk a little bit about a dinner that we hosted in Chicago during the conference at Alinea, of all places, which is a 3-Michelin-star restaurant. It's like a, you know, a bucket list kind of situation. But when we were working on what concepts and ideas can we present there together, I remember you said something that to me was really interesting. You mentioned we were, you know, at this point we were figuring out what we were going to do, and we didn't end up doing that one exactly. But you said something about changing the taste of something just through sound. And that stuck with me. That stuck with me because I've had the one where, you know, I might eat a food and then I taste chocolate and it tastes like lemon or something like that. But like, it's all triggered through here. But things like that, that are so powerful, walk people through like those types of experience and the type of work that you do with that. You know, how do you change what someone tastes just through sound? Like, basically, your work is fascinating to me, and I'm sure it's fascinating to a lot of people listening to this.
This is where it gets fun. Right. And I often refer to our research studio as a playground for the senses. We're very fortunate to have built really great partnerships and strategic partnerships with great academic institutions, including my alma mater, Harvard, but also other great institutions of thought leadership like MIT Lab, Media Lab, Stanford, Cambridge, Oxford University. But that said, taking all those Ivy League schools out of it, we're having fun exploring the different ways we have implied memory through the senses. And I want to explain what that means. So while we've played with certain conditions, inspired by certain conditions like synesthesia, who are people that basically have a cross reference of their sensory signal, so they can taste colors, they can hear letters, etc. We've created experiences around that. But then what we started noticing was, how do we translate this to online or digital or hybrid experiences? And what we found quickly was that we all carry this sensory bank of references. And I want to share a very simple example. If you look at a picture of a prickly cactus, you could technically feel it, mm-hmm. Right? You almost went like that, right? I saw your video kind of move back and you didn't see the picture. You were guided in this case by my voice. So these things carry behavioral weight, if you will. It carries emotional weight. And what's interesting about this is, unless we know what context or what reference you have to this, it could be anything. So part of what we're helping and experimenting with brands like Journey, who are thought leaders in the space and who are helping clients reimagine what spatial design could be, is creating these journeys of implied sensory elements that elevates any experience. So going back to our multisensory dinner and our concept of how do we show clients and partners like Walmart, like PepsiCo, what are some fun new ways we can engage with customers digitally? Well, one of them was inspired by Willy Wonka, the movie, the original. One of my favorite movies, and I think for all of us in this creative sphere, it's going back to that child in us of having fun. And we created together with Journey a digital balloon, basically, that morphs from just a regular balloon to a strawberry balloon, to a grape balloon, into a caramel liquid balloon. Now, mind you, this is all provided on a digital screen. And in the meantime, we have our audience members chewing non-flavor taffy. And they're just looking at this video. We partnered with an incredible company called Adoroma in Japan. And all of us worked together to create content that releases scent in specific moments of that content's delivery. So let me frame what happened in the user's mouth. They put in the non-flavor taffy. They're looking at this visual change from a regular balloon to this strawberry. As the scent is released, that flavor that was non-specific in their mouth changed to strawberry. And as we changed the images, we were able to change the implied flavor. This is the magic of really using neuroscience, leveraging our understanding of the senses, but then powering up and partnering with companies like Journey that then can make this into an experience.
Yeah, no, it's so fantastic. Another question, and I've got two more questions for you. I mean, I could talk to you all day, you know that, but there's a big element when we talk about sensory design that I know you're very focused on, and it's wellness, right? How do we start to incorporate sensory design into everything that we do, whether it's the office, whether it's, you know, leisure, whatever it is, but how does sensory design impact wellness in the longer term vision?
Well, I think you kind of led already the conversation in a previous statement you made around sensory overload. When we talk about what's the relationship between sensory design and wellness, the issue is they're interdependent, and our wellness affects how we perceive the world, and how we perceive the world affects our wellness. So to put it into a concrete way that the audience can kind of package and take this, a lot of the spaces that we design, a lot of the campaigns that we design, even sometimes the merchandising or packaging of products, they're overwhelming to us. So much, oftentimes, they turn us off, they turn us away, to the point that we're not even consciously aware that it's the lighting or the music or some other non-congruent or non-contextual elements that distract our brain. So when we are talking about wellness, in particular with what we all do, it's how do we reduce the unnecessary signals that we know trigger you, and how do we increase the way we deliver information? So if you're a visual learner, we're going to focus on less words, and we're going to focus on maybe more movement, more vestibular stimulation. But if you're someone who is more sensitive to movement, maybe it's something that we do through color or through light. So these are the things that when we profile customers, just like what we do with persona building today, by adding these new layers, we're really able to take into consideration what makes an environment conducive to them. And what's interesting is when we get into the field of neuroaesthetics, which is basically the beauty of brain, right? How our brain approaches beauty, we can now state that when we find things beautiful and comfortable, it just makes the experience better. And if we find an experience gratifying, it makes us feel more well. So this is why we really need to continue championing this industry and evolving from experience design to what we're all talking about, transformation design, outcome-based design.
Yeah. And I love this conversation because sensory design to me, it's like magic. It truly is this magical element that we can add to experiences, right? To any experience, whether it's, you know, a retail experience, whether it's an experience at a hotel, wherever it is. I'm sure that a lot of the companies that are listening to this interview are like really interested, or their interest is piqued, right? Where can they find you? How can they work with you? Because I think that you are such a valuable resource to all of them. How can they, you know, how can they work with you? How can they find you?
Well, as you well know, Kathy, I think it's important to start with the caveat that we're in a very unique place where we choose the organizations that we collaborate with. We don't work for anyone, but we do help empower partners who are looking to empower their clients. And as you well know, you know, our philosophy, which is what drives how we conduct ourselves, how we do business, how we try and innovate within the research realm, is basically, you know, we don't believe that companies should exist to just create products. We really believe that companies should exist to help their customers find purpose. And you can do that through products, through experiences, through services, through team. We do invite people of all backgrounds and all types of companies to go to our main website, origami.org, where they can explore the latest in sensory research. We do really focus on sharing as much as we can. Obviously, some commercial research stays with our clients. But I think, again, when the focus is empowerment, we can learn from our work with Nissan on helping children fall asleep in the back of the car. We can learn from our work with the Global Wellness Institute on multisensory integration for Alzheimer's. We can learn from these things and really apply it so that we can actually embody this whole inclusivity and diversity that we often talk about. But none of those things mean anything if people don't feel a sense of belonging in the space.
I absolutely love that. Well, Ari, on that note, thank you for being on Tech Magic.
Thank you, Kathy.
All right, so that was a great interview with Ari Peralta on sensory design and just kind of really exploring a field that I think for a lot of people is something they haven't really thought about, designing for all the senses and engaging all the senses and expanding kind of our engagement with space, with our space, the space around us. In different ways. Lee, do you ever think about, you know, when people are designing experiences, how to engage all the senses?
Oh,
or do you, like, when you go to a hotel, do you notice like the smell? Like, what are your thoughts on sensory design?
Yeah, there's a couple of aspects that I have kind of like hypersensitivity to, and sound is one of them. Like nothing drives me more crazy. Like I can't think crazy when I go to a restaurant and they've got no acoustical treatment and it's just pure sound, chaos, clanging dishes like that. I don't care how good the food is. I can't do it. I just cannot function in those type of scenarios. And it's a little bit of everything, right? So right now, most of our technology focuses on sight and sound, but we skip a lot of haptics are starting to get into it a little bit. So the ability to touch, taste, smell, there are aspects of that that are great. And there's aspects of it like, you know, if I'm playing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle game, I don't want to smell the sewer, right? Like that's like, yeah, let's keep that.
Or
out.
Splinter. No, thank you.
but I think as we see more things that fall into the location-based experiences where we can do more of that, those are incredibly enticing to me. They're almost like the next generation past the escape room, right? Past the LBE VR type space. I grew up in Florida. I went to Disney World all the time because my parents were school teachers and like they at the time like a school
Florida teacher, resident discount.
Yeah, I got all those discounts and stuff. So I went to like Disney World way too much. So I love stuff like the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids experience, which was definitely full sensory. You know, that was early full sensory. Oh, yeah. You had smell, it had touch, it like the dog sneezed on you and it sprayed water. Like it was just brilliant. So more stuff like that, I think, is not only just captivating, but also kind of a reason to get out. Because it's you just don't go to the movie theater anymore. A lot of the experiences we used to go out for, you don't have to do anymore. But you're not like, you got to bring something to the entertainment. And I think that's where this is going to fill a gap.
Well, that's why I think somewhere like the Sphere really starts to embrace senses in a different way. I mean, there's still some things that are, you know, I didn't really notice much with scent. Scent is kind of the one sense that I absolutely like. I will go into a hotel and I will like immediately recognize a scent, or I will actually go to the front desk and be like, what is the scent you have? Like, I'm very particular about my perfume. Like I wear Baccarat Rouge 540, and I literally, like, I will have people stop me and ask me, what are you wearing? I'll have Uber drivers be like, what is that? Like, the other day at Jiu-Jitsu, one of the dads sitting next to me was like, I'm sorry to ask you, but what are you wearing? Like, smell for me is the one sense that I'm really, really dialed into.
So when I show up and we go to like an event and I'm just wearing like Penold Club Man, you're just like, what is this dude just rolled around in a Walgreens?
Yeah, I smell some Old Spice. What? No fancy French parfum. But no, I'm very, very dialed into smell. It's really weird. Yeah, which was troubling when I had little kids. Oh, anyway, I'm not going to get into that, but that was troubling for me as a smell person. but anyway, now that we're talking about weird stuff in some ways, let's call our producer Lily, who is going to join us for Dispatch from the Fringe. Lily, mosey on down. What do we have? What's going on? What was the weirdest thing you found? Well, one of the weirdest things you found out there related to tech.
Yeah, the weirdest thing I found this week, to tie back into the gaming chat, was a Ryanair experience on Roblox. So for those who don't know, Ryanair is a European airline that embraces their cheap flights, their crowded airplanes, all the kind of negative things that you associate with an airline, but they're cheap. So take what you get. So the story I found was that the Ryanair experience in Roblox has hit a million virtual flights. And this is just interesting because it highlights why brands are getting into gaming. So in 2015, a kid called Sebastian Koldling, he still exists, started building Ryanair, and he wanted the Roblox world to be just like real life. And he did it without them knowing about it. So it's out there though. And that's the Dispatch from the Fringe.
I love it. So how many million virtual flights?
Yeah, a million virtual flights. So a million
virtual flights. Okay.
Yes.
On Ryanair. I don't know. Like I flew Ryanair a couple like before I was an executive, I flew Ryanair and yikes. I mean, I'm all for saving money, but oh goodness.
I don't know
if I could take a million virtual flights. I hope Ryanair. Yeah.
That's new to me.
What do you think?
I don't know. I don't even know. Yeah. That just sounds like a dude named Ryan decided he was going to make an airline, and it's like,
hello, everybody. This is Ryan.
That just sounds like the worst experience. I don't know.
I'm sure our European listeners are going to have a lot to say.
I think so. Yeah. So this Roblox world, it's not sanctioned by Ryanair. So it's a bunch of kids who decided to build it. And so I think that speaks a lot to, again, why brands are getting into gaming and why we have to take this space seriously.
This actually does bring up a very interesting topic of what do you do when you're, and I don't know what the answer is here, right? But what do you do when you're a brand and you find out that your brand already exists in one of these platforms because it's been fan made, right? I can't imagine the corporate lawyer head aneurysm explosion that comes with all of that, because on one end you don't want to go after or pursue any type of legal action against your fans, especially when they're kids and they're like fan made, right? Like that's
a million flights. I mean, that's a lot of flights.
So like, what do you do when you have your very curated, very protected brand identity, trademark? I don't know. Okay, so Kathy, you do this for a living.
Airline, though. Okay. No, Lee. Like, let me center this. Like, this is a no frills airline. So, like, is it like Louis Vuitton, like a highly curated, guarded kind of brand. No, not really. I mean, yes, trademarked and everything, but I don't know. I think they should jump on it. I'm sure they might be tracking it.
Okay, let's go down this rabbit hole really quickly. Okay, so let's say it is Louis Vuitton. What do you do?
I don't know. They're a former client of mine, so I'm gonna not answer anything right now.
Okay, something that doesn't exist, Montgomery Wards. I have no idea. Circuit City comes to you.
Circuit City, you oh go. My gosh. Compact Computers, is that even, like, oh my gosh. Anyway, I don't know. I mean, that's a tough one, right? Because this is, like, obviously a million virtual flights. Lots of kids seem to be playing it. They seem to be having fun. I mean, if I was the Gen Zer working at Ryanair on the social media team, I'd be like, y'all, let's partner with them. Let's do something, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Depending on number of visits, depending on the ratings, like, I would look into it. I think, you know, you lean into community if there is already a community that loves your brand.
That's what I would at least hope most brands would do, especially mm-hmm. if it's positive, right? That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Awesome. So Lily, that was fantastic. Thank you. All right. So I think we're getting towards the end of the episode. Lee, what do you have planned? What do you have coming up? Anything fun?
Oh, no, nothing. Halloween tomorrow. Then just trying to figure out what I have to. We came back from the Augmented Enterprise Summit, which was fantastic. But the amount of follow-up that I have to do post a conference, every conference. This is the things. The conferences are fun. Yeah. And then you come back and you're just like, oh, I have a lot of work I have in front of me. But it was a great conference. It was shockingly good.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, it's all the catch up that you have to do, all the follow up and all the catch up on emails. Like, yeah, I feel you.
Oh, you know what we didn't talk about?
What?
Apple today.
What?
Apple.
That's coming out. Yeah, that's coming up later tonight, probably an hour or so after we finish recording. If I will say this as a caveat, if for any reason they announce anything related to spatial computing, we would probably add a little segment here. If not, then there's no need. But we'll see. That's coming up. That's coming up later tonight because we're recording on Monday. I'm excited. What do you think they're going to announce that isn't spatial computing?
Well, I think the thing that kind of surprised me is they're going to announce this M3 chip, it looks like, and it's going to make for a new iMac and all of these other things that are coming out. That's exciting. I've kind of been holding off on replacing my studio computer, waiting for a new processor to come out. And I might regret saying this out loud, but I'll say it anyways. It does kind of feel like the Vision Pro is going to launch and already be have a little bit of obsolescence built into it, because it's not even out yet, but it's on the M2 chip based on all announced spec. So I find that a bit strange that they're about to launch a new chipset and the Vision Pro is not out yet. So we'll see. We'll see. Maybe they did some
magic. I'm more hopeful. I don't think it's obsolete. Anyway.
Obsolete's not the right word. It's just, it feels weird that they're going to announce an M3 chip and then like their flagship VR headset, AR headset, Vision Pro is...
Spatial computing headset
is going to have an M2 chip in it. I don't know. I'm parsing hairs. That's my only immediate feedback. I'm kind of hoping that they like at least hint towards, and the M3 chip's going to be in like the Vision Pro Lite. That's going to be half the price.
Yeah.
I don't know. That'd be nice.
Let's see what they say. We'll see. I'm going to be watching definitely in a bit and see if they say anything of interest to me on the spatial computing side. So I'll tell you what I've got going on. I'm heading to New York this weekend. I got invited. This is huge, by the way. Like, this is exciting. So I got invited to attend the Council of Fashion Designers of America Awards, the CFDA Awards. Those are the Oscars of fashion, mind you. I know, such an honor. I am so thrilled. It's hosted by Sarah Jessica Parker. They're going to honor Serena Williams. My plus one is actually my designer friend, Anifa, who is the designer for Hanifa. She's dressing me. And yeah, we're walking the red carpet. I mean, everyone in fashion is going to be there. I'm just thrilled to get invited. I'm like, I cannot wait. I'm so excited.
I correlate Sarah Jessica Parker to Hocus Pocus because it's Halloween. Like, and I just can't get that part out of my head. That's just permanently the character for me. But that sounds like a blast.
Yeah, because you're not. Yeah, you were into Sex in the City watcher, I'm guessing.
No, really. I don't think I've ever seen.
SJP. I mean, to me, she's like fashion. Right?
No, I just have amok, amok, amok. That's all that's in the back of my head when it comes amok, to amok, her.
Well, if anyone's watching that on Halloween, there you go. But yeah, I'm doing that. And then when I get back, I'm going to go get a Pernubo scan, which is the MRI full body scan that everyone's raving about. It's I sent you an article. It's become the new luxury product in healthcare. I'll tell you how it goes. I don't know.
That always weirds me out. I feel like it yeah. I think that it's
great. You wouldn't want to know, like, something's up?
It's not that. I think that that's the responsible thing to do. And I think that it hopefully one day is just like a strategic part of like a yearly physical, right? Like, it should be rolled into that. If it can do that, that's what it should do. My concern is that, you know, people who deal with hypochondria or things like that can just become obsessive about it. And that, I think, anytime that you're bringing in something like that, it's kind of like WebMD is amazing unless you're just like obsessive compulsive or a hypochondriac, and then it's an absolute nightmare fest. So, you know, just making sure that these type of technologies have at least a little bit of emotional empathy behind them, I think, goes a long way.
Yeah, I'm a little claustrophobic, so I want to see how it goes.
You right? got to like go into the tube and all of that. Like, it's the whole.
Yeah, I know. I've done hyperbaric chambers, which are like, and I've done the ones where it's like a tube, a glass tube. I'm trying to like mentalize, like I'm trying to just work mentally. Maybe I should talk to ChatGPT. What exercises can I start doing? Breathing exercises can I start doing to not feel claustrophobic when I do my Pernubo scan? I don't know. But yeah, I'm trying to kind of like just mentally prepare myself for being in the MRI thing for about 45 minutes. But yeah, I'm getting my Pernubo scan. You're in there for, it's a full body scan. It's, I think, 45 minutes when you're in there, something like that.
Because when they do it on CSI, it's like zip, zip, and they're done. Is that not real?
Yeah, CSI, they solve crimes really easily. I don't think you've noticed.
Yeah. Just immediately spits out your body map, and then they say enhance, and then it shows you where there's probably, like, that's poof.
So yeah, I'll be in there for 45 minutes, and, you know, CFDA awards, excited about that. And then a couple weeks later, I'll be doing the Adweek Next in Tech event. And like I mentioned to our listeners, there is Tech Magic 30. You get 30% off if you want to be there. I will be there. I'm really excited. So anyway, Lee, thanks for joining me for episode 4.
Anytime.
Always fun to have my bestest friend.
Samesies.
You're joining me. Samesies. But anyway, we'll be back next week with more stories around tech, gaming, you name it. We're going to go into the fringe as well. Lily will be back with her dispatch from the fringe. And who knows, maybe we'll get some listeners to tell us what they want us to ask ChatGPT on the podcast, and we'll bring her back.
I can switch I can make that however.
Yeah, you can switch it up. Yeah. Switch it up. It'll be Snoop Dogg one day. So anyway, thank you for everyone that's listening. We are so thankful, and we feel so grateful for the way this podcast has been received, and the folks that are starting to message us, asking questions and making requests or things that they want to hear and listen. So please leave us a review, subscribe, and thank you for listening to Tech Magic. We'll see you next week.
Hey there, podcast fam. Are you ready to break free from the social media rut? Hold on to your hatch, because we've got just the thing for you. Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for leveling up your online presence. Whether you're a personal brand or a company, they've got the tools and know-how to take you to the next level. With Viral Growth, forget about those endless hours of video editing. They handle everything from brainstorming to polishing your content, so you can just focus on being awesome. And guess what? We're hooking you up with a sweet deal. Use code ADWEEK for 10% off when you sign up. Ready to take your social media game to the next level? Head on over to viralgrowth.io and let's turn those digital dreams into a reality.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.